Welcome to Halley Healthcast, the wellness podcast from Halley Health, your partner in helping you live your healthiest life. Every episode on our podcast addresses a new topic important to your health and well-being, bringing in doctors, specialists, and other health experts who offer advice and answer your most pressing questions. Today's episode is all about headaches, migraines, and basically pain awareness. September is Pain Awareness Month, so it's the perfect time to learn more about something we're all acquainted with to some degree, unfortunately. Although certainly some more than others. Here with us is Adam Johnson. He is a physical therapist at Carle Foundation Hospital's Brain and Spine Institute in Urbana. Welcome, Mr. Johnson, and thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your knowledge. Let's begin with the familiar about our topic and move from there to the more unfamiliar. All of us, if we are human, experience pain in some form or other from the moment of our birth to the instant of our death. And one of the most common forms of pain we all experience is the headache. According to the World Health Organization, headache disorders affect about 40% of the world's population, or 3.1 billion people in 2021, and are more common in females compared to males. But what do we know about them? Mr. Johnson, what causes a headache or migraine? And is there any way we can avoid them?
Don't kill the messenger, but the answer is for most headaches and migraines, the researchers don't know what causes them. They break them down into two camps. There is a secondary headache and a primary headache. And the secondaries are the less common ones. These are the ones that have a known cause, but it's maybe 10% of cases. Some researchers would say even 2% of cases. But these are the blood clots and the tumors and the infections, intracranial pressure problems, but they're less common. The primary headache is the majority group. This is probably 90% or more of headaches, and there's no known cause. These are the common headaches that you know. These are the tension headaches, the tension groups, the migraine groups, the cluster headache groups. And so there's a lot of theories on what causes these, but nobody really knows for sure. Now, they've done some studies, and they found a lot of fascinating things about headaches and migraines, what happens during the process. And so they found changes in neuronal activity, sort of neurological storms that are happening in the brain, and they see changes in chemistry and blood flow. But it's sort of like watching the explosion happening and describing the explosion. Nobody really can explain for sure what's lighting the fuse. In the medical model, it comes down mostly to chemicals. They think that there's some kind of chemistry that's happening that's doing this, but it's still a mystery. Nobody's ever pegged it. What is widely accepted is that there's a region in the brainstem that gets set off, and it has to do with the trigeminal nerve of the brain. There's this cranial nerve called the trigeminal nerve, and we know that it's responsible for the majority of headache and migraine. And in the brainstem area, there's this nucleus. It's got a big long name called the trigeminocervical nucleus, and it gets lit up. It gets sensitized, upregulated, and it's well known that this is the underlying problem in the headache, that it starts there and then it goes on into the brain, and this message, this neuronal activity goes on to the brain, and then pain is felt. But what sets off that region in the brainstem is the mystery. So there's a lot of thoughts on things that trigger it, whether it's hormones and stress and caffeine or tobacco or depression or anxiety, not enough sleep, missing a meal, certain foods you take in. Most of the theories look to chemicals that are causing this problem. And so some of the main treatments are to try to adjust the chemistry in the body and the brain to help this, telling people to avoid certain triggers, avoid certain foods, get good sleep, exercise, try to reduce your stress levels, et cetera. I'm a physical therapist, and I've been practicing for about 25 years, and I've been specializing in neck problems for over 20 years and specializing in headache and migraine for about that period of time. The majority of my caseload is headache and migraine sufferers. And I have been astonished in my practice at how often you can make headaches and migraines get better by working on the neck, by treating the cervical spine, a musculoskeletal problem. And so what I've had to do is step back and ask, where is this discomfort coming from? What is the underlying trigger? And it comes down, in my idea, to two main things. So the human body, there's two major drivers of pain. You have chemical pain and you have mechanical pain. Chemical pain would be, you know, like vinegar on a wound or a disease process where, you know, there's chemistry attacking the nerves in your body and it hurts. Mechanical pain's obvious. You know, that's the whiplash. That's the ankle sprain. A force applied to human tissue can cause pain. So when I get a headache patient or a migraine patient of my own, I'm asking, is this mechanical or chemical? And the only way to figure that out is to move their body and see if you can change their symptoms. The gold standard in medicine is, can we abolish the pain with an intervention? In orthopedics, that would be with an injection. Can we knock out the pain with an injection? Can we get them 90 to 100% better? I would pose the same question. Can I get rid of it with mechanical techniques? Can I move their neck in a way that reduces irritation and brings total relief? And when you can, if you can totally abolish it, the conclusion on that case is it's got to be coming from the neck. One of the fascinating things I've seen is most of the folks I work with have migraines on a regular basis. They have them anywhere from once a week to even 7 days a week. But when they don't have the migraine, many and most of them, actually most of them, are experiencing daily headache, some form of daily discomfort. And so my job is to try to figure out mechanically, what do I do to their neck to reduce this discomfort? And when I do, when we start to reduce their head discomfort with some exercises and some position changes, they get a little relief with that. But the first most amazing thing that happens in the course of the first month is their migraine frequency reduces. They're not having the migraine when I see them necessarily, but the migraine intensity and frequency and duration starts dropping pretty quickly in the first month of their home program for their neck. And then you carry that on, and we see their migraine frequency is dropping easily 50%, sometimes 100% in the course of a few short months. And so the conclusion in those cases is there must have been a major neck factor going on there. Exciting step too is when you knock out the pain, there's a lot of other symptoms. If you have headaches, you also know you often get visual changes and pressure in your ear and jaw tightness and grinding your teeth, and you get chronic sinus congestion and visual disturbances and tearing eyes. A lot of those symptoms get better as well when you work on the neck and knock out the head pain. So it's pretty exciting.
I love it. Well, thank you, Mr. Johnson. That was incredibly informative. So it sounds like cervical spine issues could be the cause of more health problems than just headaches. Is there any way to alleviate this condition?
I'm going to answer that with a story on how this came about. I kind of fell into this. This is not taught in physical therapy school. It's really not taught in med school. It's something that's been discovered in the clinic by clinicians. A few decades ago, there was a physical therapist who's smarter than I think I will ever be. He was treating people for neck conditions. They had neck pain, upper back pain, shoulder blade pain, tightness, numbness, tingling, or pain in their arm. Case after case, he was having good success with his neck patients. But every now and then, he would give great relief to their shoulder blade and neck. But the very techniques he was doing to them or having them do would give that person a boomer of a headache. And he'd have to send them home. And he'd try it again the next visit. And he'd give them a crazy level headache. And so sometimes he would have to unsuccessfully discharge a patient and just tell them, I can fix what you came for, but we have this total roadblock with this headache that's preventing us. And I have to let you go. I can't torture you like this. So it was frustrating for everyone, but one day a light bulb goes off and he says, you know what? I'm causing headaches by moving the neck. So maybe I could make the headache better if I just moved it a different way. Hmm. And so he spent a number of years with a lot of willing headache and migraine patients, gradually exploring mechanical forces to try to alleviate it. And at the end of the day, he came up with, this is no joke, about 200 or more fine-tune mechanical techniques to reduce head and face pain. And it's interesting because only one, maybe two or three of those techniques will work per person. So you're trying to like crack the code, cracking a combination lock. It's like trying to line up the tumblers in the neck to open up the vault of relief. Now, in this process of getting relief for these folks, he figured out how the headache starts. And what would happen is they would come in without a headache. And when he would move them wrongly, too aggressively on their neck, they would usually say, I'm feeling this discomfort at the base of my skull. And he would then do more of this irritating maneuver to their neck. And then they'd say, well, now the back of my head hurts. And he'd do more of this. And then they'd say, well, now my ear and my jaw and my temple are bothering me. And he noticed case after case that the headache spread away from the neck. It started close to the neck, and then the headache spread up over around the head and then down into the face in a very predictable manner. And he was able to map that out into 10 different regions. And so after seeing that case after case, he said, I know how the headache starts and where it spreads to. Now I have to make it go backwards. And so he tinkered around with people and learned that if you take that furthest most region of their head symptoms, that's the furthest away from their neck, if you could lessen that, it's like you're escaping out of the headache and driving it back towards the neck. And that was the key to success, was taking those further regions and shrinking the symptoms back towards the neck. So what we then do is when somebody comes in the clinic, we try to find the furthest regions of their head symptoms. And our goal is to mechanically move their neck in a way that will reduce the strain, reduce the irritability, and get the headache to back off. One little zone at a time.
Well, thank you for that inspiring answer, Mr. Johnson. It's good to know cervical spine irritation is not only treatable, but literally reversible as well. So is there anything our audience can do at home to avoid or reduce symptoms of cervical spine irritation?
The two most important things are a consistent exercise session per day and some posture to match. We don't do multiple types of exercises. We would just do one or two. Now, this is a challenge for a podcast. You know, it takes me an hour to figure this out with a new patient. But there are two exercises that are the most common relievers for the majority of people. They can be done in a chair. You just need to get yourself a firm, upright chair, like a computer chair or a kitchen chair. And you need to sit up with good upright posture to make this happen. Now, just briefly, the reason for these exercises is to reduce the mechanical irritability of the neck, to reduce the strain on the soft tissues to help you escape out of your headache. The first exercise, hard to teach verbally without videos or visual cues, but it's called a chin tuck, or in therapy language, we call it a retraction. And what it involves is sitting tall with your head very level, where you're going to pull your head backwards over your shoulders. Imagine you had to balance a cup of coffee on top of your head. You don't want to tip your head down or up. You don't want to spill the coffee. You want to keep the coffee level as you just pull your head back over your shoulders. Or imagine someone's going to put a pie in your face. They're going to give you a pie in the face, and you're just trying to pull your head back to get away from the pie. So you sit nice and tall. You're just going to glide your head back over your shoulders and see what that's going to do to your head symptoms. Now, I don't recommend you try to do this like 100% on your first go. Just do a small range of motion, especially if you have higher level pain. Just pull your head gently over your shoulders, maybe just like a third of the way. You're just going to tuck back almost like you're making a double chin. If that makes the symptoms worse into your facial area, I would not do it again. But if it has no effect or makes it feel better, then start doing repetitions of 10. And you could do about 30 of these in a row, 30 reps. And it's something you would want to do multiple times a day for a few weeks. You could even do it every 2 or 3 hours. So that's one of the most common relievers. We call it chin tucks. The other common reliever, same setup, nice tall chair, upright posture. You're going to pull your head over your body just a wee bit, and then you're going to put one hand behind your head. And you're going to just kind of cradle the back of your head in your palm. And then you'll put your other hand's thumb under your chin, and you'll just lift your head up a few degrees, like maybe like a quarter of the way up. And you're just going to rest your head in your back hand like it's resting on a pillow. Let your hand take the weight and just stay there for about a minute. Now, likewise, if that's making symptoms worse into your face area, I would stop. But if it's having no effect or giving relief, stay there for a minute. And then I would do that 3 times in a row, a minute each time. You can switch hands each minute. And I would do that every 2 or 3 hours for a few days and see if it starts to take the head discomfort away, like it's shrinking things back towards your neck. So those are some of the common exercises you can do. But the exercises can give relief, but they don't have a high lasting relief if you don't have good posture to match. If you then just go and look down and slouch, you're going to restrain these tissues, kind of like popping a scab on your finger. If you bend your finger the wrong way, you'll pop the scab back open. So you need to use good posture alignment. And that involves using good chairs, staying away from sofas and recliners, keeping yourself relatively straight. When you do that, you need to think about the fact that your head weighs about 12 pounds. If you slouch, if your head carries forward, not only is it bending your neck in the wrong direction and straining these tissues, it causes your 12-pound head to exert 42 pounds on your cervical spine. That's a lot. That's like a bag of water softener tabs just dangling on your neck at the office. So if you pull your head back over your body, if you keep your chest raised up like a string on a puppet on the breastbone, pulling the puppet up, making it look happy, if you lift your chest and pull your head back, you're taking 30 pounds off your neck. You're shortening the tissues on the backside of your spine and bringing relaxation to them. That can help reduce the headache. Looking down, another big problem. When you look down, it doesn't just pull and strain on these tissues. It also adds 60 pounds on your neck. So if you keep your head level, if you keep your computer screen at eye level, if you bring your phone up high and don't look down, you're going to drop almost 50 pounds off your neck. And good things happen to headaches when you get 50 pounds off of the neck throughout the course of the day. So keep your screens high. Don't look down. Take your desk surface. If you're reading and writing and looking at books and things, raise and slant your desk surface somehow so you don't have to look down so much. So these are some of the things that you can do through the day at the office. People are all the time getting worse headaches by the end of the workday. They think it's the eye strain on the computer. I'm here to tell you it's not that mainly. It's your neck being strained. You may not feel the pain in your neck, but if you start making these realignments, it's a very good chance you'll start noticing less overall eye tiredness and eye strain and pain at day's end than you're used to.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Johnson. That is super helpful. Those are some truly beneficial exercise and posture strategies for our waking hours. But what about when we are asleep? A lot of people struggle with head pain in bed at night or wake up to bad headaches and even migraines. So how can our sleeping position impact our cervical spine health as well? And if so, what can we do about that?
Yeah, sleeping positions can greatly affect your neck for the bad and cause discomfort to go into your head. In fact, after doing this for a number of years, I am of the opinion that neck strain at night is the greatest missed opportunity for healthcare providers who see neck patients and headache patients. I know there's a lot of people out there who keep waking up to their headache. In fact, you probably dread going to bed at night because you're fearing the pain of the morning. Other people experience the start of their migraine in the middle of the night or first thing in the morning. You go to bed fine and blammo. And so 20 years of experience treating these cases has taught me it's almost always due to poor cervical alignment at night. Surprisingly, it's ended up not so much being the barometric pressure or what you ate the night before, but how you position your neck in your bed. Case in point, I get a number of folks who've developed their headaches when they were 7 years old, 9 years old, 10 years old, before puberty. And then their headaches or migraines have continued into adulthood for even decades. And these are the interesting cases because their symptoms started before puberty. They started before we can blame hormones. They started before they were getting lots of caffeine or alcohol or other chemicals that we often like to blame the headache on. Even though kiddos can experience lots of stress in their life, they're not experiencing some of the same stressors that the adults do that we blame. These kids, they go to bed feeling fine, and then they wake up to a headache or a migraine. So I've learned to ask these patients whose symptoms started at such a young age, tell me what percentage of your headaches and migraines back in those younger years, what percentage of them did you just wake up and that was the start of it? And the answer is easily more than 50% of the time. My follow-up questions I've learned to ask are, do you sleep on your stomach or do you sleep in the fetal position? And those are the two positions I've come to learn are the major players in nighttime pain, especially for the young people. So those are the two positions. If you struggle with waking up to bad headaches or migraines, assess those two positions. Sleeping on your stomach, if you do that, in order to breathe, you have to turn your head, you know, almost 90 degrees one way or the other. And don't try to prove this point right. But if in the daytime at the office, you were to turn your head 90 degrees to the left and leave it there for 3.5 hours, you're going to get a headache. And so if you're sleeping on your belly, you're putting your neck in a very compromised position. And this is the one position that I need all headache and migraine patients to eliminate. In fact, just in general, if you want to keep a healthy neck for your life, just get away from sleeping on your stomach. Now, the other position that's a problem is sleeping in the fetal position, where somebody's quite curled up. They've got their knees up to their chest, and most importantly, what's happening is the chin is down towards the chest, so the neck is bent downwards, and that's putting a constant strain on all the tissues on the backside of your neck, We call those your posterior tissues. And those tissues are just constantly strained for hours, and it eventually brings enough irritation that it refers pain on into your head or face. So sleeping on your side would be okay. You just don't want to curl up. What you want to do, though, is you've got to get your foundation in order. So getting out of the fetal position starts with the lower half of your body. If your knees are up into your chest, then your upper half of your body is going to be rounded over too. So you need to straighten out your legs. You need to get your knees away from your hips. Straighten out the lower half of your body. Think of getting your shoulder, your hip, and your knee in the same line. Now, you can bend your knees if you want and have your feet behind you a little bit, but you want to keep your shoulder, hip, and knee more in a straight line. That's going to get your foundation in order. Then you need to work on pulling your chest back a little bit, like just think about good posture, and you need to pull your head back over your shoulders just a little bit more and make sure that you're not dropping your chin down to your chest, but keeping your head more in what would be a level position. Also with sleeping on your side, a lot of people wake up to headaches or migraines on their side and they're not in the fetal position. But what's going on wrong for them is usually their pillow is not proper. Most people don't sleep with enough pillow when they're on their side. They're only using one pillow. The pillows are too thin. And so we need to make sure we're filling in the space between your ear and the mattress. If the pillow is too thin, then your head is going to be tipping towards your bottom shoulder. And that's going to put a constant side bending force on your neck. And after a number of hours, that can lead to irritation and pain. You need to have enough pillow so that your head is in line with the rest of your body. The way I do this is I look at the breastbone or the sternum. And if you just find the line of your sternum right there in the middle of your chest, if you can just find the top of it and the bottom of it, like where the ribs come together, and then find the top of your sternum, which is the little notch, that little notch that's just at the bottom of your neck in the front, you would kind of choke yourself off if you push just above that. Find those two landmarks and you can make the line of your breastbone. And then you want somebody to look at you and make sure that the middle line of your face is in the same line as your breastbone. And usually when you get it right, it feels a little odd because your head is propped up a little higher than feels natural to you. In fact, when you get this right, your head should be propped up on a slight incline because your shoulder boosts you up. Your shoulders are wider than your torso, so your shoulder boosts your upper body up just a little bit. That puts your breastbone on a little bit of an incline, so you actually want the center of your face on that same incline. You're not trying to get your head horizontal. So if you can make those changes, that will reduce a lot of side bending irritation to your neck. As for pillows, I've become not so much a fan of the memory foam pillows. They help some people. It's not a one-size-fits-all world, though, and they don't help as many people as we would like in the clinic. And so I've become less a fan of those. I become more a fan of pillows that are thin to medium in thickness and that are soft and kind of pliable. They could be filled with a loose polyester fill or feathers or down, or sometimes the buckwheat pillow, something that you can kind of move the stuff around a little bit to mold to you. But thin to medium in thickness, usually you're going to need two of those when you're on your side. Sometimes to get the pillow up just the right height, you'll even need to fold up a towel or two. You'll need to put a few plies of towel underneath your pillow just to get the head raised up to just the right level. Final thought on your side is make sure you're not poking your head forward like with a forward head position. You want to pull your head back over your shoulders a bit. Now, when you make these little changes, you do want to watch your head symptoms. So if you happen to have some degree of discomfort or symptom in your head or face, when you make these realignments, watch and see if they change, because often they change fairly quickly. It's not like they just totally go away in the first minute, but there's enough of a change you can tell you're onto something. If you have symptoms, for instance, in your forehead or your eyes or your nose or cheek area, when you realign your pillows, see if those symptoms will lessen as if your headache is starting to retreat back towards your neck. As for sleeping on your back, also for most people, that's not a problem. But some people, it does bother them and their pillow ends up being too thin or too thick. This is a very case-by-case experiment. You just have to listen to your head symptoms when you do this. Do this in the daytime when you're wide awake, but I would just get one thin to medium pillow. I would find the symptoms that are in the further regions of your headache, like in the facial area or forehead area. If you don't have symptoms, then it might be more like the top of your head or side of your head. And I would just lay down on one pillow and see what happens to those symptoms in the next 1 to 2 minutes. Then I would pull out a second pillow and I would try that and just lay on two thin, medium thickness pillows.
Sometimes it helps if you stair-step those pillows, if you stagger them so the bottom pillow is under your upper shoulders plus your head, and the top pillow is only under the head and the neck. So that's what I would do in terms of sleeping on your back.
Wow, that is all so fascinating, Mr. Johnson. Thank you so much for that awesome answer. So looping back to the theme of this month and this podcast, what main message would you communicate to our audience about headaches, migraines, and pain awareness? What should all of us be aware of about cervical spine-related pain?
Never underestimate what the cervical spine can do. Here's some things that increase the odds that your neck is playing a role. If the chemical approach has failed, if medications haven't worked enough, if avoiding triggers has failed you, if the traditional headache treatments haven't helped enough, then it's more likely you have a mechanical neck problem. If you also have, along with your headache or migraine, you have pain or stiffness in your neck or in your shoulders, mid-back or shoulder blades, or if you have discomfort or numbness or tingling in your arms or hands, it's likely a neck issue. If your headache or neck symptoms can be increased when you move your head or neck around, or when you have it in awkward positions, again, likely a cervical spine issue is going on there. If your headaches are on one half of your head or face, or if they sometimes switch sides, it's likely a musculoskeletal neck problem. If you've seen the specialist, if you've seen the dentist, the eye doctor, the ear, nose, throat doctor, and they can't find anything wrong with your ears, your eyes, your sinus, your mouth, your teeth, then it's more likely referred symptoms from your neck, even though it doesn't feel like it's coming from that area. So simply don't underestimate what the neck can do. This thing is crafty. It is elusive. It refers symptoms in the upper half of the body and the head and face very readily, much like the way a heart attack makes your arm hurt. You know, sometimes a heart attack feels more like arm trouble than a heart problem. Of course, some people know that their neck is the cause of their headache, but much of the time, for many people, it feels more like a head problem, not like a neck problem. But that is the nature of referred pain. So if you haven't considered your neck, I would just encourage you, please do that. Just give it a thought. The researchers are starting to point this out more. Case in point, we know now that migrainers get neck pain more often than nausea. So people who get migraine experience neck pain more often than nausea. Well, what's important about that? Well, because nausea is actually one of the defining characteristics of migraine. It's in the checkoff list. It's part of the definition. But migrainers get neck pain more often than nausea. So we should at least consider the neck even in migraine, not just in headache. But at the end of the day, even if your neck seems okay, you've got really nothing to lose trying the things that we've talked about, the posture strategies, the sleeping things, the exercises. If you have a healthy neck, you're not going to hurt yourself trying these things. So give the exercises and posture strategies a try. I would just encourage you, keep those exercises going several times a day along with the posture strategies, and you just might be pleasantly surprised in about a week. I guess my final thought is that just the greatest obstacle to all of this is awareness. Awareness of your body, awareness of how slowly the irritation starts. For example, if you took your finger and you pulled it backwards, if you pulled your finger back towards the back of your hand, it's not painful. You just pulled enough to cause a little stretch in your joint. But if you leave it there for 6 hours, it's going to hurt. And it's no different with our cervical neck structures. Postural and positional strains take time to build up and cause pain in the head. These things are slow, stealthy, silent attackers. And the majority of people I work with have no idea that their positioning is causing their pain until we start knocking it out in the clinic, and then they can actually go and repeat that phenomenon at home. And just as it takes time for the strain to bring about head pain, it takes time for the pain to go away when you realign. I mean, the longer you sleep in a bad position with your neck, the longer it takes your headache to calm down. So don't expect a miracle when you pull your head back over your shoulders for the first time. We do wear casts for 2 months for a reason. And I know we love grand slams. We want microwave changes. We love home runs. But the headache game is more often won with walks and singles. So you do have to be patient when you try these things.
Very well put. And if you pardon the pun, Mr. Johnson, you've definitely made us more painfully aware today. But you've also been an absolute pleasure to have on our podcast. Thank you so much for joining us and for all that you do every day at Carle Foundation Hospital and the Brain and Spine Institute for so many people and families. That concludes today's Halley HealthCast. Tune in next time as we tackle yet another topic important for your health and well-being. And remember, Halley Health is your partner in helping you live your healthiest life. Visit Halley.com, that's Halley.com, for resources, information, tips, and much more. Let us help keep you and your family healthy and well. Thanks for listening. We hope you tune in again.